Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everyone, this is Justine Rotolo. I'm also known as Miss ADD. I want to welcome everyone to the program today. We're going to have, I know, a very interesting program. And it's the title is Improve Reading Speed and Comprehension. But before I talk about that and bring Jason on, who's our guest, for those of you who follow me, I think that you know The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer completely changed my life. Just an incredible book. He now has a new book out, and I hope all of you would run right out and purchase it. It's incredible. I started reading it this week, and I just can't seem to put it down. The name of it is The Surrender Experiment, and it really takes you through his life and how Michael Singer got to this place in his life where he is willing to surrender and not resist, and just how he came about this enlightenment. So, again, for those of you who know me, you know how much I love The Untethered Soul, how it changed my life and put me on this journey that I've been on for the past 7 years. And now that he has this new book, I would encourage everyone to go to Amazon and purchase it. It's amazing. In addition to that, I want to remind everybody who's in the Los Angeles area that I do run 2 adult support groups for CHAAD, children and adults with ADD. The first group, which began 6 years ago, this September, is in Torrance, California. It's located at the Center for Learning Unlimited. It's 2785 Pacific Coast Highway in Torrance, and it's every Wednesday night from 7:30 to 9. It's a wonderful group. I would encourage everybody who's in the area to come and join us. The other group, which started a year ago in June, is on the west side in Culver City, and the address there is 6666 Green Valley Circle. It's held at the SHARE building, S-H-A-R-E, and that's a building that houses a lot of 12-step programs, and they have been kind enough to allow us to come and have our group there. So if you're on the west side and you want to join us, please come and join us. So now, without further ado, we're having some problems. Let me tell you a little bit about Jason then. Jason Mark Alster, he's been on the show before. He has an amazing video which would help everybody improve reading speed and comprehension. Jason is an ADHD coach and a tutor. He deals with relaxed concentration, which we talked about the last time he was on, which I'm sure we'll touch upon again today. He has study strategies. He does speed reading, memory techniques, handwriting correction, test-taking strategies. That's a big one for those of us who have the co-occurring disorder of anxiety that go along with ADHD, and art instruction. He's also a published author. And today we're going to basically be talking about his new video. And the link, by the way, is on the show that is posted all over Facebook, but I will give you the link before we hang up, Jason and I. But I think we're having a hard time getting Jason back, or do we have him?
No, that's him right there. He's just having problems getting him here.
Okay. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Justine.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. We were having a little technical difficulties. I'm sorry about that, but we got you on.
That's
now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm here.
So I'm really excited to have you back on the show. The last time it was a great show, got a lot of positive feedback. So I guess what we're going to focus on today is the new video that you've done.
Yes.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, did it start yet, the show?
Yes, we're on. The show is starting.
Oh, okay, we're on. Okay, great.
Yes.
Sure. Well, just to add a drop to my background, I research in neurophysiology and neurodiagnostics. That's my background.
Okay.
And I've worked with ADHD also with biofeedback and neurobiofeedback for many years, but I added learning strategies more and more to this multimodality approach. When I started with that, No one really heard of the word a multimodality approach with ADHD, but now it's like commonality. And they understand that it has to be a multimodality approach. So that being said, I put out this book in around the year 2000. It was the very first book, self-help book that was in color for ADHD using natural relaxed concentration techniques and combining it with learning strategies. It was called Being in Control. It made it to number two on Amazon.com in learning strategies. And we talked about that last time.
Yeah.
And in special ed. And in the book, there were, each page was a concept to help people with ADHD, dyslexia, but not so much dyslexia, but and test anxiety. I grouped those people together as far as helping them, though it's not exactly the same thing. Now, in each page of that book, I had a concept, and part of the learning concepts were how to improve your handwriting, how to manage time, how to read better, how to do better in math, how to improve your memory, how to pass exams. And what happened was, is that little by little, I made a video of each of the concepts. I took the concept itself, and I went to it into detail. So the very first video was, anyone can improve their own handwriting. And then the next one I made, not so much for ADD, but I ended up doing workshops for adults and senior citizens for memory techniques. So I put out a video about a half a year ago, which could also help people with ADHD, but it's called memory technique. You know what? I got to look at it right myself. Haha, they always like joke about you forget your memory, you know? Oh, you remember to come to the workshop, you know? So it's day-to-day memory. Data, I have to read it myself, you know. Day-to-day memory enhancement technique for adults and senior citizens. And why adults and senior citizens and not, you know, kids with ADD or just the general population? Well, number one, there are plenty of memory technique videos and YouTube videos and things like that for kid, for anybody in business or students. There's like a ton of them, so I have nothing new to add with that. I just use those techniques and they're fantastic. But then when I started working with people in senior centers, I realized that their memory needs are not the same as a student or people at work. A student might want to remember dates for an exam. A senior citizen, that's not their memory issue. They don't need to remember a date for an exam. But as you know, seniors have problems with memory for many different reasons. In addition, memory is one of the biggest fears of a senior citizen because they don't want to fear, they have the fear of losing control and not being able to take care of themselves if they would get Alzheimer's. That is more a bigger fear than the fear of death. So, you know, to lose your independence. So I'm there and I'm realizing, number one, no one addressed the memory issues of senior citizens in a video. And number two, what are the issues of senior citizens? So I researched this after I was giving all these workshops, and I found out what the seniors wanted to remember, what they needed to remember, and I put that into the video, Day-to-Day Memory Enhancement Techniques for Adults and Senior Citizens. Do you want to guess what the number one, or anybody in the audience, just throw this out, what their number one thing is they wanted to remember and why? I mean, I didn't even notice myself, but do you want to try to give a guess? I mean, I don't expect anybody to get it, but...
I don't know.
So a senior citizen, their number one concern, believe it or not, is to memorize names.
Yes, because you're talking to somebody who has a big problem with remembering.
You forgot that one, right?
I'm telling you, I it's amazing to me. My other symptoms are really good, but when it comes to, I cannot grab like Hollywood names. I mean, it's just, I have to say, do you remember the guy that was in this movie? And it's ridiculous. So if you can help me with that, you're my hero.
So that's in the video. So the thing with the names, but here's why the senior citizens have, and you're talking from California. We're over here in Connecticut. We don't have like, you know, who's that actor, but we're in the East Coast, you know? So, what happens when you're a senior citizen? So now you go, you retired, and now you're going to senior centers, or senior living, and suddenly, you know, where you were the only person at home with your family, suddenly you're meeting 20, 30, 40 people a day. How
right.
do you remember all their names?
Right.
Especially when your memory's taxed. So, and that's very important. So that was one of the things I saw. Well, you know, they want to know the names or where they parked their car or
right.
when's their doctor appointment, you know? So the whole set, and here was one, what are the names of their grandchildren? You know, or what date is my child's birthday? So
I'm
going to
pack it in
stuff,
when that happens.
So there you go. But actually, this is true stories. So I made a video for each concept. So then I got to the big one. This was a hard one for me. And I did a video for art also, which was part of, you know, part of being creative in the book of being in control. But then I got
right.
to the improve reading speed and comprehension, which was in the book. So I was able to compile about 25 years of experience into this into this video based on a lot of experience I had working, tutoring, and also with kids with ADD. So I learned what are the reading problems of students, what are their issues, and to learn how to solve those issues. And then I put it all together in this video. And of course, I had to know how to make videos to be able to do it.
Right. Did you make it?
I made it.
All by
so
yourself?
It's not a how
wow.
type movie, yeah. I do videos. I had to because I wanted to get a lot of my stuff that I did with education out. So I had to learn how to make videos. And actually, I do videos. I do video book trailers for authors, and I do videos for myself. And so I basically learned how to make videos and
wow.
And edit them and put it out. It's not going to be like a Hollywood version type video, but it will
right.
be a how-to educational video sort of thing, you know, good enough to get the point across and it looks nice.
Wow, that's great. And so, you know, what I did was, well, actually, my marketing person took your link to this video and put it on all the links to different Facebook pages that we post the show on.
Thank you.
For those people who are listening who don't know where to find it, I mean, they can go to my Miss ADD group page, but besides that, this is it, right? It's Create Space eStore. So it's www.create.com/442605.
Yes, so basically they only have to remember the title. It's also on Amazon.com now, but they have to type in the exact name of the title because if they type in my name, for some reason, this one is not showing up. And CreateSpace is an Amazon.com company for self-published people.
Right.
So CreateSpace is Amazon.com also. So it's improve reading speed and comprehension. And
okay.
there's a reason
right.
why I call it improve reading speed and comprehension versus speed reading. And the reason for that is because speed reading, which was an Evelyn Woods concept in the 1950s and 60s, and we know that President John F. Kennedy was an avid fan. I think President Johnson also, they all took speed reading.
I took it too.
And you took speed reading too? Oh,
yes,
that's great.
My father spent a lot of money. It was a waste of time.
I'm happy you said that. All right. Because now you'll appreciate what I did in the video.
Okay.
I'm just going to say, well, it wasn't a waste of time for a lot of people, but one of the complaints was it was a lot of time, waste of time. But I'd love to hear how much you spent because the video only cost $27. How much did you spend?
I believe now this was in my junior year of high school that I was in a Catholic school and my father listened to the nuns when they said she could really benefit from this. And they were probably right because they could see that I was really floundering and nobody knew back in the Stone Age about ADHD. I believe it was $500.
Yes. So speed reading was between $500 and $700 for a course.
Right.
And they had almost like Kaplan's all over the place. You can go take an Evelyn Wood speed reading course and it took 3 weeks. And it was a fantastic course for people who had nothing before that. I mean, this is
right.
the first time that they came out with the idea that you can increase your reading speed more than what you were born with. Because again, people thought you were either born an artist or you're born knowing math and you didn't, you can't be taught, you know? And then
right.
they got this thing, no, you can read faster than what you're born with, you know? So when it first came out, it was a hit, but But when you say waste of time, that's correct, because it didn't address all the issues, especially if you have ADD, or
right.
a lot of the issues that this video addresses. This is a new generation. So that's why
right.
I say reading better. But the other thing, the main complaint, and there are a couple, if you look at reviews of speed reading, and we say this today, the main complaint was that it was skimming and not reading.
Mm-hmm.
Or that the faster you read, the comprehension goes down. And then
right.
they talk about speeds of 400 to 1,000 words per minute. I mean, who can read 1,000 words per minute and know what they're reading, you know? So basically, they're skimming and picking out a couple words here and there. And that's not, anybody can do that. That's not really increasing your comprehension. So the big complaint was, you know, you're not really reading because you're decreasing your comprehension. And number two, what about the enjoyment of reading? People want to read and enjoy what they read. That being said, so why do they have to read faster?
Right. Right, exactly.
So that's the background to Evelyn Wood's controversy.
But I just want to bring something up. About 6 months ago, I read an article. I was actually working with a high school student, and we were doing English assignments. And he had to read a Google article about how ADHD, the symptoms of ADHD are growing more and more, basically because of the internet. So you remember years ago when we had reports that we had to do, papers, we'd go to the library. We would have to research, and we'd have books, and we'd have to, you know, quote bibliographies. Like they do that as well today, but we didn't, there's a lot of skimming. This is what this article was saying. There's a lot of skimming going on, and so people without ADHD are exhibiting some of these symptoms because they're not truly reading, taking the time to read. They're just kind of running through things because it's the technology age.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how you feel about that, but I found that very interesting.
Those are not the problems of people who have ADHD. In a moment, I'll tell you what they are when they come to reading. Now, but those are the problems of everybody, what you just mentioned. And
right.
one of the technology things that they have on the internet, which is actually quite good, you have to break it down to what you want to read, because not all material is equal. But
right.
There are new technologies where you can make the words move quicker, or you can play with the size of the lettering on the
mm-hmm.
internet or on the computer, which is very helpful. I mean, I increase the letter size when I read.
Me too.
And
yeah.
And you can actually use the cursor of the mouse to help you read. So there are some advantages to the computer when you do have some issues with reading. But I had this book, as I remember, I think I talked about it last time, called Leaving Home, Going Home, Returning Home, where I talked about my experience with biofeedback helping ADHD people and some really interesting cases that I put in the book. And one of the thing that influenced me to write, to get into the reading of and how to improve reading for people with ADHD and everybody, was because I had a 17-year-old kid in Israel at the time who never read a book before in their life. And
wow.
he could not be diagnosed. They didn't know, was this dyslexia? But it didn't show dyslexia on the exam. Was it ADHD? You know, what was it? And the kid wanted to go to college, and his whole question was, can I go to college, even if it was a college for ADHD in the States he wanted to go? And part of his problem, again, was his parents lived in different countries. So he never really had a native language. He had Hebrew as a native language. He had English as a native language. He had Afrikaans as a native language. You know, you name it, he was moving around a lot. So
okay.
he never really developed learning skills, and that's probably why he got to age 17 without reading,
right.
being able to finish the book. But it turns out that people with ADHD, their problems are concentration while they're reading, and here's a big one, regression. They get stuck on words, and then they have to go back and reread.
Mm-hmm.
Or they skip lines because they lose their place, and that slows them down. Or they forget what they just read, even if they're reading slow. So
yeah.
when you're talking about ADHD, you're talking about these other issues, not just skimming, that would not really even matter how fast you're reading, you would still have these issues.
Right.
And that these are the issues that the book are dealing with, how I solve these problems for people who have problems reading, where they are regressing, where they're getting stuck on words, where even if the speed is not important to them, they're still going to get stuck. However, that being said, speed is important because a lot of research has shown the faster you read, the more you remember, not the slower. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is because when you read faster, you have a word bank. You increase your vocabulary and you have something to compare it to. When you have a poor word bank and you don't develop your vocabulary, then while you're reading, you get stuck on a lot of words. So physically, you might be able to read real simple words very fast, but a lot of people with ADHD, because they had problems in school in the beginning, they didn't develop their word bank, and now they get stuck on words, and now it sends them back to regress and all that, and that slows them down. So actually, the more you read, the faster you read, the better you read and the more you remember. Another reason, and this I show in the book, is a lot of times the things you get stuck on, you don't remember, it's actually, they'll tell you later on in the story. So you don't have to go at that moment, look it up in a dictionary, lose your place, get lost, lose your focus. You can keep reading, have the confidence, and find the answer later on down the road. So the faster you read, the more you'll comprehend.
Hmm.
Because it's not going to stop you from reading.
It's interesting. Yeah. It's very interesting. So let me just ask you a question. How many years of research did it take for you to make this movie?
25 years.
Wow.
This book, the information in this book, I mean, this is a breakthrough. You talk Evelyn Woods, this is the next generation. This is way ahead of Evelyn Woods. This is based on 25 years of research after Evelyn Woods even came out, testing all the different methods. But Evelyn Woods also was not tested on ADHD. It was made, for John F. Kennedy, right? It was made
right.
for the White House, made for business people. It wasn't made for a regular student, which they applied later on. It was made for people that had to read 100 newspapers in a day, or 100 pages in a day of the newspaper.
Yes, yeah.
It wasn't made for people, students, or people with ADHD. So to apply an Evelyn Woods model to people who have to study in school or have ADHD, it would be the wrong application. And that's why you would say it was a waste. I'm not saying, I don't know if you had ADHD or not, but it would be a waste of time. You do have ADHD, so
yeah.
It would be a waste of time.
It right? was. It absolutely was a waste because of time and money. Didn't help at all. Yeah.
Because it doesn't apply to you.
No, did I read faster? I guess I read a little faster, but I wasn't retaining what I was reading.
Well, that's the point with Evelyn Woods' method. You can read, you can skim, but you're
right.
not retaining. Retention
exactly.
didn't go up, and that's why I added the word in the title, and comprehension, improved reading speed and comprehension. You're improving the comprehension, because I knew that was the major complaint with the speed reading methods, and there are a couple of them out there, that you're decreasing comprehension.
Are there still speed reading methods out there that aren't yours, so people know that?
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of methods out. There are a couple. They're actually broken down to a few different type of methods. And I'm using one of them in the video that I like. It's called meta-guiding. I like that one, but I'm not using just that one. And the whole point is you can't just teach speed reading alone. Let's call it speed reading for the sake of our audience, because that was the historical name, although this is not speed reading. You cannot even use any of the speed reading techniques alone. You have to add to it other things like relaxed concentration exercises. You have to add to it, and here's a big one. I show you that about 50% of the words that you read, you don't need to understand the information. So you have to learn how to differentiate words that you need to know from words that you don't need to know. So you are already cutting you're increasing your reading speed by 50 to 60% just by being able to differentiate the wheat from the chaff. And then I show people how to do that. And then I use methods which I know from tutoring or from English, how to recognize words, because also I taught foreign language. I taught English as a second language. So you get stuck on words that you don't recognize, or I also taught, I specialize in science, I wrote a lot of papers, and you had to know, especially if you learned neurophysiology and anatomy, which is a very hard course, you get all these muscles and anatomical things, and they're very hard to understand what these things are. So you have to have a method to figure out what words mean without getting stuck on them. So I put that into the video so you don't get stuck on words. I show, so also you have to know how to break down words into their roots, how to differentiate suffixes from prefixes and what the root is. So I put all this into the video, and then I added, because I'm an author, so I added a very brand new concept in reading. And there are two new concepts in reading. One is to put yourself in the shoes of the author. Because I am an author and I have a television show where I interview authors, so I'm very good at understanding what the author meant. But when someone's reading and they're having a problem, they don't know how to understand, especially when they're taking a test for an SAT test. And, you know, a lot of questions will be try to understand what the author was meaning in this sentence when they asked the question in the test. So I show you how to think like the author while you're reading a book so that you can understand what's going on. And here's a really great tip for everybody. And I only picked this up because I had when I'm tutoring kids. So let's say they got an assignment to read a book. And the very first thing you should do is very simple. You look at a book trailer to get a synopsis of the book.
Wow,
before you
great
read
idea.
It. Look at a book trailer. Look what, you know, see what the book's about. Don't just start reading it. So
that's
we look
great
and
idea.
I make book trailers. What do you do about that? So I put that in
where can you get also. Where can somebody get a book trailer on YouTube?
You mean to make a book trailer or see a book trailer?
No.
Oh,
let's say somebody.
Yeah. Right. So usually today when an author, it depends on the company and the author, a real good professional author will have a book trailer for their book, just like a movie trailer for a movie.
Right.
A real good professional author, the real good companies. They have a place for it on Amazon. When you look up the book, they'll have a trailer. It's only something that's starting on the last couple of years. However, that being said, the more famous books, especially for books having to do with school, maybe not so necessarily for books that are more classic, but the books having to do that kids have to read in school throughout the whole country sort of thing. So even the students, they made book trailers on those books. For instance, I had to teach I had to help these kids I was tutoring about this famous book that came out called The Wednesday Wars.
Okay.
And I didn't know anything about the book. And so what I did was I just looked up the trailer. And all the students looked at the trailer together. And we got an idea of what the book's about by looking at the book trailer.
Wow, that's a great idea. Really great. So, you know, I know you're starting to talk a little bit about the techniques. For those of us who haven't seen the video, there are a lot of people out there who have not. Maybe you can give us a little bit of the ideas.
The idea is, first of all,
about the different techniques that you're using. If you could walk us through them so people could understand.
Well,
them.
Sure. It's not, again, the first thing in any video that usually has to do with speed reading or improving reading speed or reading comprehension, the very first thing is to be able to take your own test and judge your own comprehension level. So whenever you read, and it turns out that 2 minutes is the best amount. From my research, not 1 minute, not 5 minutes, but 2 minutes is the good number to test your reading. You read how many words you can in 2 minutes, and you don't read faster. You don't read faster than what you can understand. So you're reading at the level of your understanding, and you're testing yourself. And you can have a family member do this for you. You know, look at the watch, because if you're looking at the watch, or you didn't put a timer on, then you're not really concentrating what you're reading. So you're reading. And you check in 2 minutes, and you get your word per minute rate. And of course, you have to divide it by two. What's your word per minute rate? So you have to divide the 2 minutes by two, you know, to get that 1 minute rate. And somebody can test your comprehension. You know, how ask you five questions in the article that you read, how many words you read. You know, what exactly do you remember? So you have your comprehension rate with your reading rate, and now that's your basis. Once you start using different techniques. To see what works for you and how your reading and comprehension is going to increase with time. And this way, you know, just like you want to check your weight, if you're having a diet and you want to know if it's working, you got to measure yourself, you got to weigh yourself. they should hit you. So this is a very well-known method, but I add that it should be 2 minutes. Not 1 minute's not enough to get into it. And
okay.
longer than that is not an accurate measure either, because let's say you have a focusing problem or a fatigue problem. So, you know, it's not going to be an accurate measure after 5 minutes of what your real reading rate will be. It'll be a fatigue rate. So that's not going to be your reading rate. So two
okay.
minutes is a good amount.
Okay, that's
great. That's number one. And that's number one. Number two is then we have how to understand, I show in the video, different paragraphs. And I show you that from those paragraphs, and I actually took from the famous book, A Tale of Two Cities, because that's classic.
Okay.
That's hard. I had to read that in high school. I mean, today I wouldn't even attempt to read it. But in high school, I had to read A Tale. We had to read like stuff that was really hard. I had to read Julius Caesar in high school. I mean, that stuff was hard. And
yeah.
I had to read A Tale of Two Cities in high school. Come on. but that was in those days.
Right.
So I looked
yeah.
at it. I went to A Tale of Two Cities, and I wanted to demonstrate, you know, how much can you understand. So I took the very classic first paragraph, and I broke it down. I showed how many words you actually need in that paragraph to understand what the paragraph is saying.
Oh,
and it
great.
Turned out like 50% of the words you don't need. Now, when you talk about percentage of words, we all know that Charles Dickens, you know, we're talking about the type of reading you're doing and why the author's writing, okay? You have to understand where the author's coming from before you can figure out how many words you have to know. So if it's a newspaper where there's a lot of advertisement and they want to have advertisement space, they're notorious for repeating and repeating and repeating the same concept and the same words over and over again because they want to sell space. Charles Dickens, he made very long stories because he had a syndicated column, okay? So he wanted to have very long books, and he kept, so there's a lot of talk in there, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas you get to a scientific journal, they have to be exact, and it might be in that case you can't speed read because you have to read every single word, okay? But forgetting about speed reading, what about the fatigue, and what about regressing and losing your place? So the other parts of the video have to deal with relaxed concentration techniques that are in being in control. And also that book, I put that into the video, the ones that were pertinent. And then also how to recognize, and this you'll get in a scientific article, how to recognize words that you don't understand. How do you deal, and that'll stop you and slow down a lot of people. They'll read and suddenly hit a word they don't know, and now, boom, they lost their place, they're daydreaming, they go back, they regress, and instead of reading, let's say, 100 words per minute, now they're reading 50 words. You know, they only got
okay.
that out there because they got stuck. So the other thing is people don't realize how many words a minute is important. So most people who have a learning problem, they read between 80 and 150 words per minute. People who don't have a problem will read about, who never really learned the technique, will read about 150 words a minute and comprehend, okay?
Okay.
And comprehend what they read. At least 80% they'll comprehend. However, if you learn, you take the video and you learn a technique, how to improve your reading, or if someone took a speed reading technique, they'll be reading 250 to 300 words a minute. And today, because we're in information overload and information technology, and you go to university, they want you to read 300 or 400 words a minute and comprehend. You cannot go to college, at least the college that I went to, and, you know, and absorb all the material they have to read without being able to read 300 to 400 words a minute and comprehend. So
yeah,
you want
I agree.
To be able to get up there.
Yeah.
And I did one other thing that was really cool. I did a calculation that if you increase your reading speed by, let's say, just 10%, but people who do techniques, they can double their speed. And I'm talking to comprehension also when I talk about speed now. Let's say you only increased it 10-15%, not necessarily doubled it. Well, at the end of a working lifetime, from the age 20 to the age of 65, let's say, if you increased your ability of reading by 15%, you actually saved like a month of life. Think
That's
about
great.
It. The time you increase to read more and more and more, you know, it's like, let's say you slept, you know, 6 hours a night instead of seven. So if you do a calculation at the end of 40, 50 years, you know, think about that. That's 1 hour a day that you save from sleeping for, you know, 50 years.
That's great.
Do the math.
Yeah. Yes. Do the math. Okay. Math wasn't my subject, but that's okay. No, that's a very good, that's a very funny, it's not funny, it's a very good point. It really is. Yeah. So I have a question, and this is like, if I buy this video, and please bear with me because I am technologically challenged. Mm-hmm. So if I buy this video, do I download this and so I have it so I can show it to other clients? I don't know. See, I don't.
Okay. So that's a good question. You can, this video is on DVD. You can
okay.
share it with other clients. That's on DVD. But you
okay.
can't download this video. Now, the reason why you can't download it has nothing to do with being able to download the video. It's because Create Space as a company, because I do have the video being control. I made a video of the book, and that can be downloaded. I also have
okay.
The memory. I think the memory one, I'm not sure if you can download that or not, but some of them I have that can be downloaded and some not, because that is more a publishing question in this case. And the publishing
okay.
question is, when you make a video for Amazon.com, for Create Spaces, which is their company, they'll allow you to publish the DVD, but to be able to download it, a certain percentage has to be, like, you can't have just slides or instruction. You have to get out there like in a movie and talk in front of a blackboard and stuff like that. So just to get up there and talk in front of a blackboard so that it could be downloaded, I didn't do that. I made slides and I did narration, and some of it is actual live video too, demonstration. So it's a combination, but I don't think I had enough percentage of actual live movie to make it that it could be downloadable. So that's
okay.
the reason. It has nothing to do with what it could have been downloaded or not.
Okay, so it's a CD or a DVD. I'm sorry.
A DVD,
DVD. Okay, that's great.
And that's
I
important,
just...
too. You said CD versus DVD, because one of the very first ones I put out was a CD. So you basically can put it into a computer. But today, you know, the new technology with making your own videos, you can make it as a DVD, and then it can even go into a television or a large screen.
Okay, but it can also go into a computer.
Yeah. Anything okay. where you can put a DVD.
Okay. Okay. No, that's good to know, because I know that we have some professionals listening to the show too, and I'm sure, you know, and parents are going to want to buy this.
Yeah, well,
and,
like,
you know.
Well, I think every library in the United States should buy this video, period.
Oh, I think
every
so too.
And actually, where I live, the library just bought one. There's
no that's
doubt.
Great.
And they always talk about, you know, helping people read and all this stuff. Well, here it is. This is it. I don't know where anyone's going to look anywhere else. This is the video that teaches people how to read better, period. And I stand by what I just said.
And so why is your method better suited to people with ADHD than material on speed reading?
It's suited for everybody, not just ADHD, but it also is suited to ADHD, where the other ones are not. And I show this to some teachers, and the reason being is, one, I have experience in ADHD, which not anybody who's teaching speed reading does. So I know the issues of ADHD. And number two, I have a couple things there that deal with regression and deal with concentration and fatigue. A lot of the videos out there don't deal with concentration and fatigue. They just go and show how to read faster, sort of thing. They also don't deal with how to think like an author. They don't deal with how do you break down a word. Now, I think there are some modern videos out there, and I don't know if they're expensive or not, but there is one thing out there that I was looking at that is really, really, really all-inclusive, but I think it's broken down into many parts. And they also, I think they did a really good job where they included everything. I don't know if it's for ADHD specifically, but they really did a really good job. I don't know the name, but they also took everything into account.
Okay. Okay. So, no, this is really exciting, because this is going to be able to help. You know, I mean, all I deal with really is the ADHD population, and of course, I'm just thinking while you and I are talking, I have a little girl who just made UCLA, and she was mm-hmm. diagnosed years ago with dyslexia, and I'm thinking about the amount of reading that she's going to have to do, and so I'm thinking that I'm going to talk to her parents and tell them to get her this DVD, because I think it's going to be very helpful, because that's the population I deal with.
So dyslexia, I'm going to give a mention that. It depends what type of dyslexia. If it's a type of dyslexia where you're actually reading the letters backwards.
Right, so, I don't think that's...
And yeah. I found out that that's a very small percentage of the
right.
who's being called dyslexia out there. A lot of stuff is being called dyslexia, and it's ADD or something else, you know?
Right.
So if it's actually reading the words backwards, well, there's different dyslexic programs out there. But
okay.
There's also things that are being called dyslexia, but they're not really dyslexia. They're like auditory processing problems, or
okay.
They're ADHD, or they just didn't learn how to read, or they had ADD when they were learning how to read, but then later on when they could read, it was already too late. So those type of people, this video is great. It'll help people to catch up. But if it's pure dyslexia where they're seeing the words backwards,
right.
I think the video would help them, but they'll definitely have to do other things too. There are different techniques out there for helping ADD.
Yeah, she's had a lot of help over the years because her parents are those kind of people, which are wonderful people.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just thinking to myself because there is a bit of angst that she has
mm-hmm.
about, you know,
yeah,
going here
definitely.
And all the work.
Definitely be great for her. And also, by the time they get to that age, they already got a lot of the earlier dyslexic issues resolved. So definitely
right.
would help, no doubt about it.
Okay, so I have a question now, because you said something that kind of threw me off.
And I would also
tell
her to get... Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. What else did you tell her to get?
But if someone's going to college, they need something more than just reading strategies, so I would also
right.
tell them to get the ADD book because you have some accelerated learning stuff in there and the memory video.
Okay. So let me ask you something, though. You said something that threw me off. You said that a lot of dyslexia that's being diagnosed, which I agree, may not be full-blown dyslexia. How could it be auditory processing if we're talking about reading?
Oh, they're not hearing the letters. I have a kid right now that has auditory processing issue. What he's doing is he can read, but he hears the word wrong, which this video is not really dealing with. So he hears, like he mixes up an E with an A. So every time he hears an E, it's really an A and vice versa. So they're mixing up the sounds of the letters. And there's a technique called phonetics, which you can
right.
get of DVD. So that is for people who have like auditory processing issue. They're hearing the letter in a different way, and that might not necessarily be dyslexia. Might have been mistaken in some people as dyslexia. To me, dyslexia is actually just seeing the word backwards. But all the other stuff that's getting put into dyslexia, and don't forget, I worked in different places in the world, so what I've seen in other places might not necessarily fit in what's going on in California. So, you know, it's very specific to the locale.
So, okay, but when you say hearing letters differently, are you meaning when you're reading? Like when I read, like I hear the words because I'm reading. Is that what you mean?
No, but it's related to that. It's when you're learning, when you're sitting in the classroom and they're teaching you the word. So
okay.
you're not here, you don't know. It's more like, and more you'll see it in the spelling. You'll spell the word wrong. But when you see the word, you'll understand it. But if you have to spell it, you'll spell it wrong because you're not spelling it phonetically, or you heard the letters wrong. So that's an auditory processing, and that you'll see more in the spelling.
Okay.
And that might be mixed up with dyslexia, but it's not necessarily dyslexia. It could be auditory processing.
Okay. No, that's good to know because I wasn't aware.
But I'm happy you brought that up because there is the issue, which they do talk about in the video, but any video on reading faster also talks about this, is that people will talk out loud the words while they're reading.
Right.
Okay, they'll say the words out loud and they'll lip sync, whatever. So I think that people were taught to read out loud when they were first reading, but that
yes.
slows you down and it really
mm-hmm.
doesn't help your comprehension necessarily. So, you know, that's one of the things you have to do is not read the words, mumble the words while you're reading it, that will slow you down. Maybe when you're learning to read, but not as you're continuing to read.
Yeah, no, I know when I was very young and in first grade, we all read out loud for the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And that was painful for a lot of people. Yeah.
It was painful. And also, you know, people continue with that. No one tells you to stop. So they think that's what you're supposed to do for the rest of your life.
Right, exactly. Yeah. No, I understand that. I don't read out loud, but I hear the words in my head when I'm reading.
That's okay.
So
they
yeah.
try to, well, you know, if you really want to read faster, so they try to tell you don't do that. Why?
Yeah.
And I'm not really saying to people not to do that, because I'm not here to tell people to read 1,000 words and 600 words a minute, you know. I want
right.
them to read faster than what they're reading and increase their comprehension and not read slow. I'm not there to tell people to read, you know, 500 words a minute. So that people will tell you to try not to hear the words in your head, but to visualize the word and recognize the word. So I do have a technique in there where I'm showing you how to visually recognize the word, but I'm not
okay.
really telling you to not hear the word in your head, but you shouldn't say the word that yes, okay?
Okay. No,
that's
I don't.
Okay,
yeah, I guess you can't, probably can't teach me how to do that now since I'm 60 already, but that's okay. So then your video is for everyone. It's not just for people with ADHD.
Right, and I didn't put the word ADHD on the cover either.
Okay. But it's good for me to know this because then I can get it out. And in fact, I've had people that were contacting me, you know, this morning about they were taking my post for your show and they were going to run it to other places because they had a lot of parents with kids. And you know that. I mean, in this population,
mm-hmm.
the reading is very difficult. So...
Mm-hmm.
This is something that is really big, and I'm going to keep. What I'd like you to do is, you know, maybe forward me some stuff about stuff that I can put on my page for you so people have it. So it's
sure.
there all the time so that they
well,
can they
I
can
have,
contact.
I have a story, and it's beautiful because it comes from the book Leaving Home, Going Home. Well, I have a chapter from the story about the kid who I call it the alchemist.
Okay.
And it's about the kid who couldn't read and he was 17 years old. And I should tell the story how I had this kid and how I dealt with it. And the thing why the chapter is called The Alchemist, because the very first book that he read when he was able to read, and we're talking about 17 years, this blew my mind, a 17-year-old kid that never read a book in his life.
Yeah.
Never completed a book. He could read, but he could never complete a book, which is more like an ADD thing. So
yeah.
The first book he read was The Alchemist, and I could never figure out why The
book.
Alchemist. And then,
yeah.
It's a great book. So in the end, after when I started writing that book, the memoir, so I looked up The Alchemist and what it was about and why he actually picked that book as a kid, you know?
Yeah.
So I finally got to that conclusion, which I won't. You probably know, but I will not,
right.
you know, let people read that little chapter. I'll send you.
Yeah. No, that would be
well,
great.
Up,
I would really.
I'll put it up on your Facebook page. I'll put it up.
Yeah. And you could just put it right up there. That would be great because my Facebook page, anybody can post on. I don't have
yes,
a hard
I'll,
time.
I'll post it right here.
Okay. And so where have you gone with this video? Like, have you contacted schools? Do any of the schools use this? And how have they
the
reacted
video.
To it?
The video just yeah. came out.
Oh, okay.
So it has not
okay.
gone anywhere. I have started to lecture I'm a Connecticut author. I'm on the board of Connecticut Authors and Publishers. So I started lecturing with it. But people, you know, they hear it. They say, yeah. But, you know, unless you start doing it and using it, then, you know, that's why I'm talking to you and others
right.
to spread the word. I mean, there's a difference when someone develops and puts the stuff out, you know, unfortunately today that same person has to be the marketer. So, you know, the same person doing the research isn't necessarily the same person with all the contacts to do the marketing.
Right.
So, you know,
right.
that's why we do these interviews.
Right. It's a great way to get it out there. I was just wondering because I'm thinking about schools here that I have some relationships with that possibly this would be something for them to buy. And let their teachers look at it.
Definitely. I think every school should have this video and every library. And it's not even expensive. You know, when you talked about the Evelyn Woods of being a couple hundred dollars, it's a whole $27, and everybody in the library can read it for that price. You know, we're talking not even money.
No. No, I mean, back in 1970, $500 was a lot of money.
Yeah,
so,
it would be the equivalent of $1,000 today, at least.
Oh, probably more. But $27, no, that's absolutely not expensive. And I'm just hoping that, you know what, when you put the link on my page,
mm-hmm.
Can that take them right to Amazon? They take it right to Amazon?
Well, I'm going to give my webpage, and on that it has a story about the book that also will go to Amazon. I'm going to do that while I'm talking to you on the computer, and I'm going to put that on right now and see if you get it.
Okay. That's great.
So people can go and check that out.
Yeah, I would love people to be able to just be able to do that, because one of the things that I notice, and I'm talking about myself now, but I do work all day long with ADD people, the easier it is for us to buy something. This is why Amazon is on my, you know, it's on my phone like an app, because Amazon is so easy to buy stuff off of. Everything's in there. You just have to click
mm-hmm.
if I want to buy a book. That is how we operate. It's so funny. I hate to say this, but I'm going to. The Chad
mm-hmm.
website, the national website, I can't go on it. It's so confusing. And so this is us. I mean, if it's confusing
mm-hmm.
to us, we're not doing it. You know, because we're just moving on with our day, and this is just too much for us. And it's just a function of who we are. You know, it's not a bad thing. It's just you're going to have to make this user-friendly. So that's why I said to put it on my page so that people could just go right there and they can get it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they're going to have to hunt you down. And that's
no,
not going to happen. Yeah.
No, I'm going to
put it
up in a moment.
Okay.
I think I sent it to you as a link just now, but I'm not sure if it got there yet.
Okay, let me... I'll take a look and let you know.
Did it go through?
I think this is important.
Let me try that again. I put on...
Did you put it on to Miss ADD group? Or just Miss?
It didn't, you know, what happened is that this is technology now. Oh, there it is. Now it went through. No, I put it into your email, your Facebook email. I think I heard a beep on your computer.
Yes.
But I'll put it on to Miss ADD. So there it is right there. You can pull it over.
Okay. So now I can copy it and put it on my page.
That,
okay.
Right. So in that link, there's the story.
Okay, great.
There's
okay, that's great, because everybody's going to want this. So I'll just put it on both my pages. I have Miss ADD and I have Miss ADD group page. So I'll make sure that we get it on there today after the show's over.
It's called The Case of the Alchemist. That's the
name
of the story. So they can read the story right there.
That's great. Yeah, because I'm sure everybody would be really interested in that. So, okay, not to be derailed or anything, okay, but
mm-hmm.
can you give, this is a question, we get questions sometimes on my website, can you give an outline of what needs to be done to improve our reading?
Number one, it's actually very easy. Number
okay.
one, you have to do the test. You have to test yourself. That's
okay.
a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Number two, once you read the video, you have to understand what your problems are. Are you regressing? Are you mouth reading? Are you not absorbing a lot of words? Are you fatiguing? You know, so there's like a whole list of all the things that can possibly happen that'll slow you down and slow down your reading, or you have a poor vocabulary. So you have to understand what is your issue, you know?
Okay.
Number three, whether it's ADD or not, it's going to be one of those. You know, it's going to fit into that category. Number three, you're going to have to recognize that you don't need every single word to read. And you have to differentiate that.
Okay.
And then number four, you're going to have to learn how to meta guide with your finger, how to It's actually in the book Being Control, but I put it into this video, how to make like an S when you're going down the page and you use your peripheral vision. That's one thing you do. And you have to know like how to keep your eyes on the page without making too many eye movements. So you learn a little bit, it's a little bit physiology. So you learn how to do that. And I go and explain that quite well about the how to use your eyes and not, and use your peripheral vision too while you're reading. And then you get into the other part, how to think like an author. So you know exactly why the author and what the author and what's, you know, how to understand something that's read from the perspective of the person who wrote it. Just like an artist, when you see a painting, why did the artist paint that painting? What was their artistic statement? You know, and that'll help you understand what the painting is all about. Same thing with the reading. What is the intent of the author? You have to understand a little bit about that. And then finally, how to recognize words that you don't know what they mean, how to recognize them so you can figure them out, even if you don't know what they mean. And that's a big part of tests nowadays for graduate school and college. You know, they want, they give you part, little piece of information, and you have to figure it out, right? So this is also what reading. You see a word you don't know, you get stuck on it, but you have the ability to figure that word out. And I show you how to do that too.
So that, because the next question has to do with comprehension. So what three things can someone do to improve their comprehension and that they will find in the video?
Number one, to increase your comprehension, you have to read faster so that you build up a bank of words. Number two, you definitely have to recognize the words when you read them. You have to be able to figure them out, either by the there's different ways of figuring out a word, by the context, by the root word, by the suffix, by understanding what the author meant, so and not getting stuck and stopping and going back and looking it up in the dictionary, otherwise you'll never get through. And any distraction is going to affect your comprehension. So
let's talk about that for a minute. So like I have a lot of young adults that I work with that are in college, and one of their big complaints is they need a quiet place to take their exams. Now, some of the colleges can supply that. Others do not, because kids clicking their pens or somebody chewing on something, you know, these kids may have sensory integration issues as well as ADHD, but it just bothers them and they can't concentrate.
So they need to get those relaxed concentration techniques from the book Being Control. Or I also put out this video called Zen for ADD, Zen for ADD, ADHD. They can download that for like $1 from Amazon.com. So it's like different relaxation techniques all summarized without the accelerated learning. So you have to have some, and I also put that in the video, you have to have a couple relaxed, very quick seated yoga type relaxed concentration techniques. So that if you get taken out of, number one, if you get taken out of concentration, same thing with people who have ADD and they can't concentrate in the classroom, they have to be able to come back. The problem with ADD is not so much the distractibility, as everyone says, it's the ability to come back to focus.
Right, exactly.
So anybody can be distracted.
And I'm 100% with you, because I use meditation and mindfulness, and that brings me back all day long to center. And this is what I try to teach other people that I work with. Yeah. Because you're right. It's coming back to center.
I'm happy you said that, because then I can say, well, do I have to meditate for an hour a day just to be able to write?
No.
So what you said was, and you said something, and this is the point. If you meditate every day, so over time you build a conditioned response so that you can relax yourself because you meditated. But
thank you for saying that.
But these relaxed concentration techniques that are only a minute or two long. So even if you never ever meditated for a whole month and you will have to read, you know, 1,000 pages by next week.
Right.
So you have these mini, very short, they're called seated yoga or sensory integration exercises. I just call them seated yoga because some of them are seated yoga, but they're not. They're from Tai Chi. They're from sensory integration. They're things I made up. They're from things from the Middle East. They're even things from Arab culture. There's like a whole bunch of things that I put it all together and I use them, but they're all very short. And those things work too. So if something takes you out of concentration, you can use one of these techniques and come back to the concentration.
Right.
Now, I'll even mention one other thing. And this I dealt by, because I was in biofeedback and we had this. In a way, it's called shift of attention. But if you're doing something, and does this really work for people who have like phobias or anxiety, or real anxiety disorders, not just ADD? And, you know, they're trying to concentrate, and now there's like a noise outside, and now they're getting startled, okay? So this is a real trick, but not necessarily for while you're reading, but let's say you're doing homework or you have to concentrate in a quiet place. So you have to concentrate now on the disturbance. So let's say if someone's banging a hammer.
So right.
Instead of letting the hammer bang and drive you crazy, you now have to imagine that you see the person banging on the hammer. So once you do that, it's now part of your thinking instead of something that's distracting your thinking. And therefore, it's relaxing and something repetitious versus something that is disturbing. So that can work a little bit, but I'm not saying, you know, but otherwise, you just got to find a quiet place.
Right, right. Now, before somebody takes a test, because you have, you know, strategies for test anxiety, and before somebody's going in to take a test, let's say the night before, and
mm-hmm.
they're studying, but they've stopped studying because I don't believe you should study to the 90th hour. And they stopped studying. Yeah. So, you know, I talk to some of my clients about positive visualizations, you know, because that I'm all about positive stuff. What do you tell people that night they go to sleep, they can't sleep, they're just focusing on this? And I know for myself, I use meditation, but let me hear what you would tell somebody about that.
The way you study for a test is you start right away. You don't wait till the last minute. And if
right.
you break it down from the very beginning and you broke it down into its parts, so you're not nervous at the last minute, because for memory also, you have to let the memory sink in. And
mm-hmm.
and how you reuse that thing that you're memorizing has, just like you have to remember words to use later on while you're reading, you have to memorize, you know, you have to know those words, you have to build a bank. So if you're putting it all into last minute, you're not really putting it into the memory. It's just like a short-term memory, and then you forget it, and then the next time a test comes along, you forgot what you had in the first test, so
right.
now you don't have anything built up to relate to, okay, to have in perspective, to have a point of reference. So number one, you don't wait till the last minute. Number two, you have to be relaxed, because the number one thing that, in reality, from my experience, people don't fail or don't do bad on tests because of lack of knowledge. Either they studied or they overstudied or they studied too much, but it's rarely because they didn't study. And
right.
therefore, it's not because they don't know the information that they didn't do well, it's because they didn't understand the question, or they didn't know how to take the test, or they got stressed, and then they got like what's called a writer's block. An anxiety attack
yeah.
is really like an author's block or a writer's block. So anytime you get anxiety or stress, it blocks your ability to memorize.
Right.
So you have to know, go to the easiest question first, skim around to see what's easy and not get stuck on the hard question first. And to, again, you have to know relaxed concentration techniques so that if your students start getting nervous, you have to be able to know a breathing exercise or a visualization exercise. Now, visualization helps you memorize because it's relaxing. And when you're visualizing, you're putting it into the memory because
right.
you're now working with it. So, yeah.
No, I think that's really important because it's a big thing with kids. And, you know, it's, I don't want to get off on a whole nother subject, but it's really kind of sad because, you know, kids define themselves by, you know, their grades, and I never raised my kids that way, but it's just a lot of pressure today for the grades. And
yes, and unfortunately, the schools do that to you. Not all of them, but a lot of them, and they do define the students by their grades, and I think that's a mistake. Should be, and they're trying to change that now. They want to define it by your creativity and your things like that, and not by the grades alone, because the
right.
grades are only testing how well you take a test. It's a very known
Exactly.
very well-known statement.
You know, because I said to some a kid the other day, I said, wouldn't it be great? This kid loves to learn. But
mm-hmm.
when it comes to, you know, taking tests, he gets very, very anxious. He has a lot of anxiety. And I just said to him, wouldn't it be great if you could just go to school and just sit back and take in everything that the teacher or professor was saying to you? And actually, that's what I used to do, because I used to bring a tiny little tape recorder to graduate school, put it on the desk, and not take notes. I would just sit back and listen and take it all in. And then when I would go home, I would write the notes from the tape recording. And
I used to
it
do
was
the
great.
Same thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was great.
I used to do the same thing. Now, that is true for older technology. I used to do that
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
The reality is, that's not the best way to take notes. The best way to take notes, and you probably heard of this or know of it, is a thing
it's Cornell.
Called mind mapping.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Cornell,
okay.
mind mapping. Well,
right.
Cornell is good. I know about that. Well, they all have different things, but mind mapping, Cornell, you
uses
know, use it
colors.
For whatever. For different, for
Doesn't
different
it
things.
Mind mapping?
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I do with kids
mind
when
mapping,
I study with them.
Mind mapping, colors, no lines. Not everybody
right.
knows how to the proper mind map, because now they dump so many out there that there are better ones than others. But you
right.
got to know how to do the mind mapping. The Cornell system of taking notes is very good. And there's this method that I developed. It's called the hieroglyphic method, where you're putting things into pictographs. I think other people are using it now, too. But I know when I developed, I was like the only one doing that. But then other people did it. So it's a little bit different than the...
how does it... can you explain it? How does it work?
Well, I want to explain now why any of those methods are better than just using the tape recorder.
Right.
The reason being, and here's a couple of the reasons. Well, number one, the information that you're given sometimes is faulty and not in a specific organized manner. So
right.
when you're taking a recording, and if the information wasn't organized well, then you're just recording that unorganized information. But when you're
right.
breaking things down, and so when you're like doing a filing system versus what they call the garbage can system, a method is what you put in the garbage can first comes out last when you tip the garbage can over. Versus,
right.
so that was also with the memory, what you put in first, you now forgot and you only remember the things towards the end, right before the test. But when you organize the information that you get into little files, that's what a mind map does, or a Cornell system. So now, let's say there was in that lecture, let's just throw it out, you know, the teacher says, well, you know, there were three foods that they ate in Egypt, okay, in the ancient days. And then he mentions the first food, and then he mentions the second food, and then he or she gets off tangent and starts talking about the deities in Egypt, and then in the third or fourth page, he mentioned the third food. So now the
right.
stuff is not organized and it's out of order, and I'm just giving that in a very simplistic method, right? But now you come to the exam, and it says, what are the three foods that they ate in ancient Egypt? Well, the two things were separated from the third. It wasn't organized together. And now the student has a hard time recalling it because it was not organized when they got the information. So when you do the tape recorder technique, it's still not organized.
Unless you organize it, which is what I did.
The mind mapping.
See,
I
mind mapped it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
but I knew how to. But I knew how to do that. And I don't want to talk about me. I'm just saying my point of the whole thing was, and I want to hear about the hieroglyphics, but the point of the whole thing was this particular client of mine is like a sponge when it comes to history. Okay. And he's a history major in college,
mm-hmm.
and he would like to just be sitting back and enjoying the lecture without having to, because he has some perceptual issues, so having to take
mm-hmm.
notes back and forth. And I understand that, because in graduate school, psychology school of, you know, a Pepperdine, I was like a sponge because I loved psychology. So that's one of the reasons why he and I were talking. Wouldn't it just be great if basically you didn't have to have any tests? You could just, you know, take
well,
in the information.
You know, you got a good point there. And I would say, you know, yeah, go ahead and take in the information, because when you're learning history, there's not the teacher is not teaching something new. The history is out
right.
there, and you can get it. Anyways, one of the things you should be doing is having alternate sources in addition to what the teacher's telling you. So, you know, you should be looking up other sources and other viewpoints about the history, even though the teacher's teaching you one thing and you think it might mix you up, but it's not really. And so the truth is, something like history or math, there are many, many, many sources to get that information. So if you want to listen and hear the main points and then look it up on YouTube or some other place, that's okay. Why not?
Yeah.
It's going to be the same thing.
Right. So tell me about the hieroglyphics, though. Do you
draw?
So
this method is really, it's really cool. It's pictographs. I don't think I actually put it out in a video anywhere yet, but it's really cool. I use it with my students. Basically, I'll explain it. There are things, let's say you have to memorize. Not all things you have to memorize are equal, let's say. So I gave the example of a mind map for you for history. Why? Because there you have to organize a lot of information. You know,
right.
It could be a couple or a lecture. It could be 20, 30 pages. So you have to have a way to organize the information in a way that you can memorize it. And then you
right.
can get the video, as I talked about, even though it's for seniors, but it's memory techniques, or get some other video about memory techniques, and you'll also have ways to remember, okay? So that's one type of organizing data. But there are things that are very concise, and they're perfectly organized. You don't have to organize them, but how are you going to remember them? So let's give an example of, I give a drug, as you get older, you want it, like a nurse might have to break down and remember all the parts of the drug, or a disease, and they have to remember all the things that happen in the disease, okay? Or the makeup of a chemical thing in a perfume or in a medication, okay? So that stuff is organized, and it's like a whole bunch of tough words. So how are you going to memorize that? So if you turn that stuff into a pictograph, then it's easier to memorize. And the reason being, another reason is, number one, a pictograph is almost like Chinese handwriting. You can read it up, down, or let's like hieroglyphics. You can read it up, down, right, left. So you can
right.
still get the information that way. So it doesn't matter which direction you go. And also, you can memorize like tough words by making a picture that sounds like the word, but not really is the word, and you'll still remember it. So let's give an example. Let's see. Weathersfield, that's the town that I live in, okay? So
okay.
Weathersfield, the hard word. You know, if you have to, let's say it's a word, right? But what's it sound like? It sounds like weather, even though it's spelled
right.
differently. It's not weather, but it was a guy's name, weather. But it sounds like weather, so I can draw some clouds and field,
right.
and I can have clouds over a field. So I'll see
right.
a pictograph of Weathersfield. And,
that's
you know,
really
you have
cool.
to ask, when, actually I asked the famous Ron Davis this question, and it's actually coming out that's a good point. I actually met him in a lecture, and he wrote The Gift of Dyslexia, and I really loved his book. So I actually
yeah.
asked him a question once. I asked him, well, you know, did the ancient Egyptians have dyslexia because they wrote in pictographs? And he really didn't answer the question, but today we know that's that is a valid question. Were the people, original peoples, they were dyslexic, some of them, that's why they did pictographs, or we only developed dyslexia.
Huh.
So we left the pictographs, should we go back to pictographs, you know? So that's like a whole issue today. People are researching that.
That is very interesting. It really is. And I love that idea because, you know, the ADD population is just so creative, and that they're very visual, so that turning
mm-hmm.
words into pictures is just a great idea. Great way to remember it.
Yes, so there is, you know, so there is a movement in that direction.
I love it because it's so different mm-hmm. than what is your mainstream kind of teaching, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which can be so boring.
And as a society, we're becoming more visual with the internet and
yes.
And YouTube and stuff like that. We've definitely become more visual as a society, and also business-wise, you know, today, to make money, there's a lot more jobs that you have to be more visual versus
right.
language-based. So definitely we're becoming more visual.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's to me, like in this population, it's definitely the way to go because it's what you remember. I know for myself, growing up when I was in school, I mean, it was so boring that I would kind of make things up like that just to help me remember. I would, when I was studying, if I was studying vocab words and I couldn't remember them, I would kind of make songs up or, you know, maybe think of other things that reminded me of the word, just something that wasn't boring, because that's really what gets some of these kids is the boring aspect of it.
Well, I think we said in the first video that we made on the first part of the problems of the school, I can't say what happened exactly today, but problems were up until a couple of years ago were that the teacher has to be able to be a good teacher today, has to be able to teach in all the modalities, you know, visual. Yeah. They have to take that subject, teach it auditorily, visually, and kinesthetically. And if they don't know how to teach all three, by definition, a third of the class is not going to be able to learn that subject.
Yeah.
Because not everybody is auditory or visual or kinesthetic. And if you can't teach all three as a teacher, then, you know, you're going to lose a third of your students, and those students are going to get school anxiety and test anxiety and get sick, and school will make them sick.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I don't think a lot of, I don't see a lot of the teachers, there's some really, really good teachers, but there's not some, there are some really bad teachers as well. And
well, sometimes their hands are tied.
Well, some of them have tenure. And look, you know, I think the problem with our school system today, I was talking to a neuroscientist from UCLA. We had a long conversation about this because, you know, his claim is we're still in the rows of desks in the classroom. Don't get me wrong. There are other schools that handle it differently. But for the most part, in public schools, except for some of the charter schools, this is the way they're being taught. And he was talking about he's working on something where kids are actually going to be able to stand inside a human cell. You know, I mean, that's like being part of something that you're going to remember because you're inside of it. So how could you not? And it's very different than the teaching to the mainstream, because he's all about helping kids with ADHD because it's very close to his heart. And he recognizes that we just don't learn well that way. I mean, I could promise you that I didn't learn well that way. I mean, I've missed so much stuff in elementary school because of having to sit there and be so bored all day. And some of that teaching is still going on.
Yeah, and I'm going to, so I actually did research on some of that. I love the professor from UCLA's idea. And here's part of the problem with, if we take math, for instance, part of the problem, and you brought this up in a way, is where, let's say you're learning geometry today, right?
Right.
Well, the way we're learning it, we're given all the facts in geometry, but that's not how, and we're giving it as givens that were developed over thousands of years. Or, you know, it was developed over 2,000 years. And it was developed in a certain historical, you know, ABC sort of thing, one after the other, that people couldn't do this until they figured out that, then they can get to the next step. But we're not taught that. We're taught already at the end step. So what happens is we don't have a historical perspective on how the mind worked to develop these things. We're just given them as facts. So we never learn how to create it itself, or we never really learn the subject because we're given it as a given. So now that's sort of like a rote learning. So when you are having hands-on and figuring it out in its order, and its historical order, and there are people who wrote books on that. A guy named Devin from England put out these really great books, how to figure out how to do math visually and how to learn it in a historical way. So a lot of these like upper level math books teach it to you from a historical perspective. And when I would read that, and I would like go back to school so I can tutor the kids that I'm tutoring, and I would do that, it was like, whoa, now I understand this. So
that's great.
So that's part of, we're not taught, we're taught the end product. And I'll even give you something more. I don't want to put any teacher down, but I always felt, you know, as an entrepreneur and a businessman, I always felt, you know, if you think about it, a teacher is teaching something that they not necessarily developed. They're teaching stuff that's already been developed. So
right.
by definition, they're not the one who developed it. They're giving stuff that's already out there. They didn't create things. So how is the student going to learn to be creative if the teacher, by definition, is not creative? Now, what is creative by the teacher? Not the subject, but how they got the method out for the student to learn. So maybe they developed a way to get the student to learn something, but they didn't do anything to develop the actual subject until you get to college or to graduate school, where you're, you know, doing a thesis under a professor or something who actually developed certain things. The teacher himself, if they're teaching geometry, well, they didn't develop the geometry, and they're teaching you something that was already developed by somebody else. So how are you going to learn creativity from that teacher? Versus if I went to an artist to learn how to paint, that artist, if they're a good art teacher too, well, they're painting the paintings too while they're teaching you, okay? They're not teaching you about art from some famous artist, some other famous artist who painted their paintings. So that's the problem in the educational system, is that the person teaching you is not the person developing it.
Right. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. It really does. So, you know, I mean, I'm just all about kids being able to learn in a way that it stays with them and makes them feel good. And it's not, oh my God, I got to go to school tomorrow. You know,
my answer for that was, and I had that question a lot, you know, what about motivation? Okay, let's say you teach the student how to pass exams and how to memorize better and how to read better. But how do you motivate a student, you know? So number one, when you have the tools and life is easier and you can read better and you can memorize better and you can take tests better, so now you're better motivated because you're not a failure, okay?
Right.
Because you can start passing and you can change yourself. But the other thing is, we don't have, I know it's changed also for the better, but for a long time when we're starting off school, we don't know what we want to be when we grow up. So we don't have a goal. And when you talk about being an entrepreneur or being a grown up or doing something in life, you have to set a goal. You have to make a business plan. But if you're as a kid, don't have a business plan, you're being spoon-fed stuff that you might not necessarily want because you don't know what you want to be when you grow up. So it's boring and you're not applying yourself. You're not motivated.
Yeah.
So you have to have, I think if you have to like let children see a lot of different type of jobs and see what different type of businesses and jobs and professions are like, so that they can say, yeah, I want to be a doctor. Yeah, I want to be this. Now, I work in the medical profession. And one of the things I see, you know, when you see people who became doctors and you see, why did you become a doctor? Well, no one said because when I was a kid, they taught me how to be a doctor. They said when I got to a certain age, well, my mother died of cancer. My father died of this. My grandfather had this disease. And then you see them getting into these things because, or my father was a doctor. You don't hear anything about the school, you know, showed me
right.
that this is a great thing to be. It's like it was
right.
in my family, or I learned about it, or I was sick, you know. Then you,
yeah.
So what's the school have to do with you being a doctor?
Right.
So they,
right.
so
it's
no
just,
one really has, you know.
It's a very good point. I mean, yeah, it would be great to do some hands-on stuff. You know, the other piece of this too is that we have to develop the creative side, because there's a lot of fear that goes hand in hand with the creative side. And, you know, one of the reasons that I know my boys did as well as they did in high school, they both have ADHD and one's on the spectrum, is because I always found a creative connection to the school that really helped them to stay focused on what they needed to get done. And I believe that a lot of our schools, we don't really talk enough about the creative, because with ADD, I mean, I'm sorry, but I very much see it as a gift, and I shouldn't even apologize for saying that, but there's some big people out there in the ADD community that don't agree with that. I see it as a gift because I'm a positive person and I know how creative I am, and I see the creativity in every single person that walks through my door in my private practice and in the groups that I run. And I don't think we're doing enough with that in the school system.
Well, it is a gift, and I'm going to prove it to you. When I first started working with kids with ADD as a biofeedback therapist a long time ago, before I even got into the learning strategies per se, well, I wanted to get this neurologist to send me patients, and I had a support group in my house of all the parents, not the kids didn't come, but the parents of the kids who had ADD, they came, and I invited the head of the Department of Neurology to come so they can see, you know, what the results are of this, at that time, natural techniques, because then it was just, you know, give Ritalin, that it's, which has changed today a little bit. But
yeah.
This we're talking about the middle 1990s. So
okay.
What shocked me, and this is about what you're talking about, so I asked them, okay, you know, was your kid the clown, you know, the school clown or the school buffoon and all that stuff? And they all said, no, my kid, you know, is a lot of fun, and he's the school and the leader of the class, and the other kids love him. And I'm like, what? I thought, you know, all these ADD kids were like the buffoon or the clown
yeah.
or whatever. And then I saw, no, these are like leaders and creative kids,
yeah.
and they had a tremendous amount of energy, but they got
yeah.
stuck in their learning, which gave mm-hmm. them low self-confidence and made some of them sick because they can't pass the exams. But once they left the school part, they're really great friends and great and had a lot of stuff going for them. So I definitely agree
yeah.
with what you're saying.
Yeah. So listen, I can't believe this hour and a half is almost over. I want to ask you, I know you're an ADHD coach, and do you do work with people around the country? Do you Skype with people?
Yes, I haven't done it that much, to be honest, because I'm doing more workshops and I'm producing all these videos and books because I did it for
okay.
many years. But yes, I do. If somebody wants, I do Skype.
Okay.
Yeah.
How can they get in touch with you?
My email is Jason. It's actually on the webpage that I gave you, but my webpage is jasonalster.com, JasonAlster.com. I have a whole bunch of webpages for every little thing I put out, but that's the main one. Or my email, which they'll get on that webpage, or the telephone number. But my email
okay.
is my name, jasonalster@gmail.com.
That's terrific. So, yeah, I think I'm going to put your website up too on my page in case people want to contact you. Even if they just have questions that they want to ask you, I'm sure that would be okay.
Well, I get
you
emails
know,
all the time.
Okay. That would be great. This way they know a way to get in touch with you. And I want to thank you for being on the show. It's always great to have you on. So keep doing new stuff so we can have you back. I don't want
my
to put
pleasure.
Any pressure on you.
No,
it's really great. It's really great. And let me know what you're doing, and I'll keep in touch too, and I'll take a look at. I'm going to buy your video because I really want to use it in my practice. I think
yeah.
it'd be awesome.
And
so
give it a review. You should definitely. You'll be able. It'll be helping a lot of people, and it's so simple. You mentioned the word before about technology. You don't need any technology for this video. It's so simplistic, and it's. How to understand it and what to do, that anybody can do it.
This is great. This is great. I really have to tell you, thank you so much for being on the show again, and I'm sure we'll have you on within the next 6 months again.
Great.
Have a great night.
Thank you.
Jason. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. I want to thank everybody for listening today. I know that we all got some great information from Jason. Second time I've had him on, and I know I'm going to have him on again. I'm going to put on my Miss ADD page all his information so anybody that's listening or listening tomorrow or in the next couple of weeks or months, you can definitely get in touch with him, and you also can find the link to buy the video, which, by the way, $27 isn't a lot of money. So again, I want to tell everybody to have a great night. Please remember always to stay in the moment. It really helps with the negative symptoms of ADHD. Thanks again for being such a great audience and for all your support. Good night.